Waiting for another biotech rebound? Welcome to this audio issue of Tech Frontiers, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company. All rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. In addition to hosting Porter & Company Tech Frontiers on our website, we also make it available as a downloadable PDF. Click here to download the full report, a review of the key Tech Frontiers recommendations. In 1973 and 1974, as the U.S. stock market descended into one of the worst bear markets since the Great Depression, Warren Buffett began buying shares of the Washington Post Company. The opportunity seemed absurd. The Post owned one of the most important newspapers in America, along with valuable television stations and other media assets. Buffett estimated that the entire company was worth roughly $400 million. Yet the stock market valued it at a small fraction of that intrinsic value, $80 million. As he would relay in anecdotes he told for decades after, part of what fascinated Buffett about this opportunity was that as the 1970s bear market deepened, the Washington Post Company shares traded more cheaply even as the underlying business strengthened. The company's competitive position improved. Its media assets became more valuable. Its management remained exceptional. Yet investors, terrified by recession, inflation, and collapsing stock prices, drove the shares even lower anyway. For Buffett, shown below with longtime Post publisher Catherine Graham, this disconnect represented one of the most important lessons in investing. Occasionally, the gap between price and value widens not because a business deteriorates, but because the market temporarily loses confidence in the story, or the capacity to perceive it clearly. This June marks 2.5 years since I began writing what has become Tech Frontiers. We're overdue for a systematic top-to-bottom portfolio review. And this month, we'll begin that assessment by revisiting our entire core biotech portfolio, where we began. We'll complete the second half of our review next month, when we focus on our non-biotech names. As I reviewed our biotech portfolio, I found myself returning repeatedly to Buffett's Washington Post Company experience. Let me explain. Several of our biotech portfolio holdings have become much stronger over the past year. Alnylam Pharmaceuticals has transformed itself into a commercial powerhouse. Fortress Biotech has monetized its most important asset and now trades at negative enterprise value. Prime Medicine has moved from platform promise toward product reality. Immunity Bio has largely resolved its biggest regulatory uncertainty. Sagimet Biosciences has found a faster path to value creation. And even Unicure, despite its regulatory frustrations, possesses stronger clinical data and a stronger balance sheet than when we first recommended it. Yet in many cases, the stock prices, after soaring for a short time, have come all the way back to where we originally recommended them, or even below. For long-term investors, this combination, improving fundamentals accompanied by stagnant or falling prices, isn't a problem. It's an opportunity. So this month, we'll revisit the major positions in our biotech portfolio and explain why, in several cases, the investment thesis has improved even as the market's enthusiasm has faded. As Buffett discovered with the Washington Post half a century ago, some of the best opportunities emerge when value moves in one direction and price moves in another. Let's begin. Alnylam Pharmaceuticals, NASDAQ, ALNI. When we recommended Alnylam last June, I described the company as the Genentech of Cerna. Comparing it to the original biotech company started in the 1970s, Alnylam is a blue-chip biotechnology franchise built around the most important new medical modality since GeneTech's monoclonal antibodies. That may have sounded ambitious at the time. Today, it looks increasingly factual. But curiously, while Alnylam traded north of $490 per share in October 2025, over 60% above our $305 reference price, they have since come all the way back down to about $300, giving newer subscribers a fantastic opportunity to underwrite the shares even as the story has become meaningfully de-risked. Alnylam's first quarter this year was a monster. The company generated $1.036 billion of net product revenue in Q1 2026, up 121% year-over-year, with its TDR franchise alone contributing $910 million, up 153%. The launch of the gene-silencing AMVUTTRA medicine for ATTR cardiomyopathy, ATTR-CM, continues to outperform. AMVUTTRA generated roughly $890 million of Q1 revenue, and Alnylam reiterated full-year 2026 net product revenue guidance of $4.9 billion to $5.3 billion, implying roughly 71% growth at the midpoint. Alnylam is no longer a company sitting on one of biotech's most promising pipelines. It's transitioning into a commercial juggernaut. What's especially impressive is that AMVUTTRA is still early in its build-out. Alnylam estimates that more than 80% of ATTR-CM patients remain untreated, including nearly 200,000 patients in the U.S. and more than 500,000 globally. The company has already added more than 1,200 new AMVUTTRA prescribers since the cardiomyopathy launch, and roughly 90% of U.S. patients can receive treatment within 10 miles of home. This matters because AMVUTTRA is not a daily pill sitting on a pharmacy shelf. It's a quarterly healthcare provider-administered therapy whose commercial success depends on access, logistics, reimbursement, and physician comfort. Alnylam is proving it can execute on all four. The medical case is also strengthening. New data presented at ACC.26, the flagship cardiology conference, which took place in New Orleans, further support AMVUTTRA's benefits across ATTR-CM patients, including improved clinical outcomes regardless of baseline diastolic dysfunction. Alnylam's most recent TTR presentation also highlights an increasingly compelling long-term profile, mortality benefit appearing to improve with time, evidence of amyloid regression and cardiac structural improvement, and high adherence with quarterly dosing. In other words, AMVUTTRA's success doesn't reflect only on the strength of Alnylam's commercial team, but, more profoundly, on offering patients a truly disease-modifying therapy. The key point for investors is that AMVUTTRA is likely only Alnylam's first act. The company now has more than 25 active clinical programs and a pipeline that includes potential blockbusters in hypertension, Alzheimer's disease, cerebral amyloid angiopathy, Huntington's disease, bleeding disorders, type 2 diabetes, MASH, and obesity. In 2026 alone, Alnylam expects important updates from ALN-6400 in bleeding disorders, zilebesiran in hypertension, ALN-HTT02 in Huntington's, and ALN-2232 in obesity and weight management. The pipeline is no longer a vague platform optionality story. It's becoming a factory assembly line for blockbuster medicines. Alnylam differs from every other biotech position in our list of recommendations in that the company is already an 800-pound gorilla in its category, Cirna Medicines. And Alnylam's $40 billion market capitalization reflects that fact. But make no mistake, Alnylam can still deliver multiplicative gains from here, and I believe it will. When Alnylam's commercial revenue eventually climbs to $20 billion per year, and in my view, that's when, not if, the company's market cap could easily reach $120 billion, or 3x current levels. Sometimes paying up for a category leader is exactly right. In the 1980s, Genentech did not become less interesting once the market realized recombinant DNA worked. It became more interesting because the market had only begun to understand how large the opportunity would become. Alnylam finds itself in a similar situation today. Action to take: buy a full position in Alnylam Pharmaceuticals, NASDAQ, ALNI, up to $325 per share. Subscribers who already own Alnylam should continue to hold. Fortress Biotech, NASDAQ, FBO. We recommended Fortress Biotech in September 2025 at an entry price of $2.95 per share. While Fortress shares rose to as high as $4.38 in January 2026, they've since fallen to about $2.65, or 10% below the level at which we originally recommended them. I think Fortress shares are poised to rally significantly over the coming 2 to 3 years, and present a significantly better risk/reward today than when we first recommended them. Let me explain. Our investment thesis in Fortress had two parts: Fortress's core assets, its stakes in CUTS-101 for the treatment of Menkes disease, in potential blockbuster Emrosi for the treatment of rosacea, and in dotinurad for the treatment of gout. Are worth multiples more than Fortress market capitalization Fortress's business model? Buying up promising molecules discarded by big pharma or academia, developing these assets, then selling or licensing them to deep-pocketed strategic partners, is an especially promising way to play biotech, and AI stands to favorably supercharge this business model. Since we recommended Fortress, every important aspect of our investment thesis has gotten stronger. First and most importantly, in January 2026, the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved CUTS-101 to treat Menkes disease. Then, in February 2026, Fortress announced that its subsidiary Cyprium had entered into an agreement to sell the Priority Review Voucher, PRV, it received as a reward from the FDA for the CUTS-101 approval for $205 million in gross proceeds. The result? By the close of Q1 2026, Fortress had received net proceeds of $158.9 million from the sale of the CUTS-101 PRV. These developments left Fortress with $209.9 million in cash and equivalents at the parent company level at the end of the quarter, and mean that the company now trades at a negative enterprise value of about $75 million. What do Fortress shareholders own? apart from a pile of cash per share that now exceeds the stock price itself. For starters, they own three concrete valuable assets. Fortress retains future milestones worth up to $129 million, as well as 3% to 4% sales royalties on sales of Cuts 101 for Menkes. Fortress owns 6 million shares in Journey Medical, NASDAQ, Derm, whose Emrosi is a best-in-class treatment for rosacea that just became EBITDA positive and could plausibly be worth several hundred million dollars over the coming 3 to 5 years. Through its subsidiary Uraca, Fortress owns an estimated 15% stake in Dodonurad for the treatment of gout, a drug that will feature a critical phase 3 at year-end 2026 or early 2027, and could potentially be worth over $1 billion in lifetime sales royalties to Fortress. Applying a conservative valuation lens, I estimate the probability-adjusted future value of these three assets to Fortress at $300 million to $500 million to $500 million, implying at least 3x to 5x upside in Fortress shares from current levels. Beyond these three specific assets, Fortress shareholders also benefit from the discard pile deal-making acumen of Fortress CEO Dr. Lindsay Rosenvold, one of the savviest, most experienced entrepreneurs in the biotech domain, with several prior multi-billion dollar molecules in his track record. As Dr. Rosenvold has articulated, Fortress adoption of AI enables it to scale its search of the big pharma and academic discard pile for potentially marketable assets. The adoption of this technology coincides with an improvement in Fortress' balance sheet that should finally enable the company to play offense. The natural question, given these positive developments, is, what has held the shares back? In July 2024, Fortress suspended the payment of dividends on a small tranche of preferred stock. It took this measure as a prudent step to conserve cash in the midst of a biotech bear market. However, due to terms of the preferred shares in question, the dividend suspension has precluded Fortress from raising funds through any equity shelf offering until the preferred stock dividends arrears are repaid and the dividend reinstated. I suspect that this issue has been a drag on the stock. The good news is that the accumulated preferred dividend arrears currently amount to only $14 million, a sum that Fortress can easily afford to pay, and likely will, in the not-distant future. When this happens, I imagine the overhang on the common stock will fade away, and the market will begin to give Fortress significantly greater credit for its true value. In the meantime, subscribers who don't yet own a position in Fortress have a golden opportunity to buy it while it's a biotech net-net, trading at negative enterprise value, with many catalysts to unlock value ahead. Action to take: buy a full position in Fortress Biotech, NASDAQ, FBO, up to $2.75 per share. Subscribers who already own Fortress should continue to hold until the shares trade above $10. Immunity Bio, NASDAQ, IBRX. We recommended Immunity Bio in March 2026 at a reference price of $9.75 per share. At the time, we suggested subscribers use a staggered entry and purchase a one-third size position to begin. Since then, the stock has traded both above and below our entry price, recently changing hands around $7.25. While the shares have yet to reflect it, I believe the investment case for Immunity Bio has strengthened meaningfully over the past months, giving us a terrific opportunity to add to our existing position at a lower price while the risk/reward has actually improved. Let me explain. Our original Immunity Bio investment thesis had two key parts. Immunity Bio's Anktiva is not just another oncology drug, but instead a new immune system backbone therapy likely to change the paradigm of cancer treatment. The market is dramatically underestimating both the size of Anktiva's eventual opportunity and the speed with which the therapy can expand beyond its initial bladder cancer approval. In the few months since our initial recommendation, several important developments have reinforced both pillars of this thesis. First, the largest regulatory obstacle facing the stock appears to be easing. In May, the FDA socked Immunity Bio with a refuse to file letter for Anktiva's papillary bladder cancer expansion, creating considerable uncertainty around the company's regulatory trajectory. But since that setback, Immunity Bio has held a favorable Type B meeting with the FDA and secured support for the expanded indication from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network, NCCN, a consortium of 32 leading U.S. cancer centers. Even more importantly, the FDA subsequently accepted Immunity Bio's resubmitted Biologics License Application, BLA, and granted the company a January 6, 2027, TUFA decision date, a legal deadline for the FDA to decide on approval. Crucially, it accepted the BLA without requiring that Immunity Bio undertake a new randomized clinical trial. The result? What was once the company's largest regulatory question mark is now on a clearly defined review path, with a specific catalyst date. Meanwhile, the company has also made progress addressing one of most important long-term risks to Anktiva's emergence as a new standard of care treatment in bladder cancer. its dependence on BCG supply, because Anktiva is administered alongside BCG for non-muscle invasive bladder cancer, MIBC. Chronic BCG shortages have risked capping the addressability of the entire bladder cancer market. Immunity Bio has spent much of the past year attacking this problem directly. The company recently secured exclusive U.S. rights to the Tokyo 172 BCG strain from Japan BCG Laboratory, adding a second potential source of supply alongside its recombinant BCG efforts with the Serum Institute of India. While these initiatives remain works in progress, Immunity Bio's supply chain progress makes the BCG shortage significantly less threatening to the long-term Anktiva opportunity than it was a year ago. Immunity Bio's competitive positioning has also improved. At the recent American Urological Association meeting, Immunity Bio presented comparative analyses suggesting that Anktiva plus BCG delivers substantially longer duration of response than Ferring's Adstiladrin, while producing fewer adverse events than Johnson & Johnson's, J&J, TAR-200. These comparisons were admittedly not head-to-head randomized trials, but the data still reinforce what many urologists increasingly appear to believe: Anktiva possesses meaningful advantages versus the standard of care therapies with which it competes most directly. Taking stock of these favorable developments, let's bring our discussion back to money time. The market continues to value Immunity Bio largely as a niche bladder cancer company. But that was never our thesis. Our thesis is that Anktiva for bladder cancer represents only a first proof of concept for Immunity Bio's broader platform centered on immune restoration and reactivation, which will become broadly applicable in oncology. We think Anktiva stands a real shot at becoming the next Keytruda, a mega blockbuster that eventually generates greater than $20 billion in annual sales. However, Anktiva does not need to reach that level of commercial success for Immunity Bio shareholders to do extremely well. If Anktiva only establishes itself as the new standard of care in bladder cancer and achieves only modest success in additional oncology indications, Immunity Bio shares should still double to triple from current levels. And if Anktiva does eventually become a Keytruda scale success, well, in that scenario, Immunity Bio shares will likely be a 10-bagger. Action to take. It's time to fill our full position in Immunity Bio, NASDAQ, IBRX. Buy the remaining 2/3 of a position to establish a full position size up to $8 per share. Prime Medicine, NASDAQ, PRME. We recommended Prime Medicine in July 2025 at a reference price of $3.07. By September, shares had rallied to a high of $6.68, giving subscribers who followed our recommendation gains of over 100% in less than 3 months, and prompting me to suggest subscribers sell half of their positions. Since that time, Prime stock has fallen to about $3.47. But today Prime Medicine presents an even more attractive risk/reward than it did when we first reported on it, giving us a terrific opportunity to re-underwrite the investment by adding back to the position, or, for those who don't yet own it, opening a new one. Our original investment thesis in Prime had two key parts. Prime's gene editing platform, appropriately called Prime Editing, represents cutting-edge, third-generation technology that is far more powerful, versatile, and safe than any other gene editor, capable of correcting a far broader range of disease-causing mutations than rivals such as CRISPR-Cas9 or base editing. Prime's stock price dramatically undervalues both the quality of its platform and the significance of having one of the world's most consequential scientists, Dr. David Liu, at its helm. These two elements of our thesis have remained intact. But whereas a year ago we were underwriting a best-in-class platform, today we're underwriting that same platform when it's beginning to produce potentially game-changing products. Over the past year, Prime Medicine has transitioned from being a promising platform play to now having multiple clinical and regulatory milestones clearly in sight. Management recently reaffirmed plans to file investigational new drug, IND, applications during 2026 for both PM577 in Wilson disease and PM647 in alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, with initial human data anticipated in 2027. These two diseases, both of which affect the liver, are neither niche nor obscure. Together, they represent hundreds of thousands of patients across the United States and Europe, giving Prime the opportunity to establish an initial franchise focused on liver and built around diseases that are especially well-suited for Prime editing. Importantly, the data supporting these programs continues to impress. In Wilson disease, Prime has demonstrated correction of the two most common disease-causing mutations with no detectable off-target edits, and restoration of normal copper metabolism in preclinical models. In alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, the company has shown efficient correction of the underlying mutation and restoration of healthy protein levels at clinically relevant doses. While these remain preclinical results, They reinforce our original view that Prime Editing's superior precision and safety profile may ultimately prove to be its most important competitive advantage. Just as encouraging, Prime's proof-of-concept program in chronic granulomatous disease, CGD, continues to generate compelling clinical evidence. The company recently reported durable restoration of neutrophil function, rapid engraftment, and no detectable off-target editing, large deletions, or chromosomal rearrangements. The significance of these results extends far beyond CGD itself. They represent the first real-world demonstration that Prime Editing can safely edit human cells and generate meaningful clinical benefit. In effect, CGD is becoming Prime Medicine's proof of concept not merely for a single product, but for the entire platform. Prime's balance sheet has improved over the past year as well. When we originally recommended Prime, I viewed the company's likely financing needs as its principal weakness. Rolling to the present, Prime ended Q1 2026 with approximately $149 million of pro forma cash, with runway well into 2027. While the company will eventually need additional capital, management has continued executing on a strategy of supplementing internal resources with high-quality partners. Prime's collaboration with big pharma giant Bristol-Myers Squibb (BMY) carries more than $3.5 billion of potential milestone payments and royalties, while the deep-pocketed Cystic Fibrosis Foundation has expanded its support for Prime's efforts in that disease. Partnerships such as these give me confidence that Prime shareholders won't get wiped out by shareholder-unfriendly equity dilutions. Let's bring our discussion back to money time. First-generation gene-editing innovator CRISPR Therapeutics, CRSP, sports a market capitalization of $5.5 billion, while second-generation gene-editing platform Beam Therapeutics, BEAM, which, like Prime, relies on innovations generated by Dr. David Liu, has a market cap of $3.4 billion. Prime's editing technology is more powerful, versatile, and broadly relevant to the creation of novel medicines than either CRISPR's or Beam's. It's just that Prime is a younger company. Prime's market capitalization today is about $625 million. If, as I anticipate, Prime catches up to these first and second generation gene editing platforms as its own product portfolio ripens, the company will likely deliver multiplicative gains to shareholders. Such gains could come even sooner if Prime becomes a juicy target for a big pharma acquirer. Action to take: buy Prime Medicine, NASDAQ, PRME, up to $4 per share. Subscribers who still hold half of their original position should add back one half. Subscribers who do not yet own Prime should buy a full position. Unicure, NASDAQ. Cure. Back in my childhood, I used to love ABC's Wide World of Sports, whose opening montage always invoked the phrase "the thrill of victory" and "the agony of defeat." This phrase is apt for biotech too, and it certainly seems to fit our investment journey in Unicure. When we first recommended the stock back in October 2024, it became our biggest ever winner. Then we re-recommended it in January 2026, only to see shares collapse after the FDA delivered a shocking, unexpected regulatory punch in the face. Fortunately, we did not panic at that setback, but instead we kept calm and carried on. Shares have now recovered to a level above where we re-recommended them. It's a good time to revisit our thesis. When we re-recommended Unicure this January, the stock had already suffered what looked like a classic biotech overreaction. AMT-130, the company's one-time gene therapy for Huntington's disease, had produced spectacular three-year data: a 75% slowing of disease progression in high-dose patients, with a 60% slowing of functional decline and encouraging neurofilament light biomarker data. Given that Huntington's is a uniformly fatal illness with no disease-modifying therapy, much less anything close to a cure, this was not a modest signal. It was the kind of result drug developers spend careers hoping to see, and indeed, several medical key opinion leaders, Cole, who had spent their careers on Huntington's, described Unicure's results in exactly those terms. Then the FDA did its best Inspector Clouseau impersonation, intervening in the most clumsy, heavy-handed ways. After previously guiding Unicure toward a BLA submission based on the company's existing Phase I/II data compared with external controls, the FDA abruptly reversed course, first suggesting it wanted to talk things over with the company, then apparently insisting that Unicure undertake a new, randomized, double-blind, sham surgery-controlled Phase III trial. Shockingly, after delivering this guidance to Unicure, then-FDA Commissioner Dr. Marty Makary appeared to publicly attack the company on television and defended the absurd idea that preserving the integrity of clinical trials should require Unicure to recruit a cohort of Huntington's patients willing to undergo sham brain surgery as part of the trial's placebo-controlled arm. The absurdity of the FDA's position notwithstanding, its revised guidance to Unicure is in fact a serious setback for the company. It likely pushes a U.S. approval timeline out by years, not months, and the market was right to remove some near-term value from the stock. But the market was wrong to treat this news as if AMT-130 had failed. It hadn't. The FDA's concern focuses on evidentiary architecture, not clinical effect. That distinction matters enormously. The central question investors face is not, does AMT-130 work? The data suggests that it does. The question instead is, how many more regulatory hoops must Unicure jump through before patients can access it, and the company can generate sales? Importantly, Unicure's path has improved meaningfully outside the US man. In late April, the company announced a constructive pre-submission meeting with the UK's drug regulator, and now expects to submit a UK marketing authorization application in Q3 of 2026 based on the existing three-year Phase I/II data package. That is a big development. The FDA may be forcing Unicure down a long road to US approval, but the UK may offer a faster, more pragmatic path. UK approval would materially validate AMT-130, create a first commercial foothold, and pressure other regulators, including the FDA, to engage seriously. The FDA would likely find itself under withering and appropriate criticism from Hung Tinton's patient advocates in the US if patients in the United Kingdom can access a transformative therapy while those here in the US remain locked out. Unicure also has the balance sheet to endure a longer path to US approval. The company ended the first quarter of 2026 with about $587 million of cash and equivalents, enough to fund operations through 2029 even if no revenue materializes. The balance sheet strength is no luxury. It's the difference between being forced into a punitive financing and being able to pursue the UK filing, the FDA Type B meeting, the four-year analysis, and potential additional ex-US regulatory pathways from a position of strength. So where does all this leave us? Unicure is no longer the clean, near-term FDA approval story we hoped it might become after the September 2025 Phase 2 data. For the time being, the US regulatory path now seems harder, slower, and more expensive. But Unicure's AMT-130 remains one of the most important genetic medicines in development, targeting one of the most devastating diseases in medicine, with data that still look extraordinary. For investors willing to hold the stock for 2 to 3 years, I anticipate patients will pay off, and Unicure shares should eventually trade again north of $60. Action to take. Subscribers who own Unicure, NASDAQ, Cure, shares should continue to hold them. Given the greater than anticipated complexity of Unicure's regulatory path, we are moving the position to a hold, not a buy, for newer subscribers. Roivant Sciences, NASDAQ, Roiv. We recommended Roivant Sciences in March 2024 at a reference price of $11.37 per share. Shares recently closed at $28.70, a gain of roughly 150% in a little over 2 years. As is customary in our risk management practice, I suggested subscribers with gains over 100% sell half their position and hold the balance. Ordinarily, after a stock has more than doubled, the natural question is whether the easy money has already been made. After revisiting our thesis in Roivant, I don't think that's the right question. Instead, we should ask whether Roivant today is a better business than the one we recommended 2 years ago. And in my view, the answer is emphatically yes. Our original investment thesis in Roivant had two key parts. Roivant has developed a uniquely effective pharmaceutical moneyball model for identifying, acquiring, and developing overlooked assets from Big Pharma's discard pile. The market materially undervalues the collection of assets housed within Roivant, including specific pipeline assets such as the company's autoimmune franchise, the fortress balance sheet that enables Roivant to play offense when the much of the rest of biotech world has to play defense, and the compounding pattern recognition that enables Roivant to repeatedly create value through disciplined capital allocation. Since our recommendation, virtually every important element of our thesis has gotten stronger. Most importantly, IMVT-1402, the lead asset of Roivant's subsidiary Immunovant, continues to emerge as one of the most exciting franchises in the domain of autoimmune disease. In May, the company reported impressive data in difficult-to-treat rheumatoid arthritis, RA, a population that has already failed multiple advanced therapies. IMVT-1402 produced response rates of up to 73% in RA patients, enough to suggest IMVT-1402 may define a new standard of care. But the significance of these results extends far beyond rheumatoid arthritis. IMVT-1402 is simultaneously being developed in Graves' disease, myasthenia gravis, Sjögren's disease, SID, cutaneous lupus, and other autoimmune indications. The RA data therefore serves not only as a new indication, but also as validation of IMVT-1402 as a potential pipeline in a product. Meanwhile, Roivant's second major franchise, Brapocitinib, continues to advance steadily toward commercialization. The company expects an FDA decision in dermatomyositis during Q3 2026, with additional pivotal readouts in non-infectious uveitis and cutaneous sarcoidosis anticipated in 2027. Management has also expanded the program into lichen planopilaris, a painful autoimmune hair loss disorder with no FDA-approved therapies. Here too, what earlier may have been understood as a single-asset opportunity increasingly looks like a multi-indication, multi-billion-dollar franchise. Roivant's progress advancing its potential blockbuster assets has not come at the expense of the company's balance sheet, which remains fortress-like. The company ended fiscal 2026 with approximately $4.3 billion of cash and equivalents, no debt, and a 60% to 70% share in up to $2.25 billion in forthcoming cash proceeds that come from the favorable settlement of its litigation with Moderna, mRNA. Meanwhile, Roivant still has potential upside from its outstanding litigation against Pfizer, PFE, and BioNTech, BNTX, which it has not yet settled. Few mid-sized biotech companies possess Roivant's combination of balance sheet strength and pipeline depth. But perhaps the most important development since we recommended Roivant is one that appears neither in the company's balance sheet nor in its pipeline. When we recommended Roivant, the company had already demonstrated a remarkable ability to identify value where others saw none. Roivant's Telavant transaction remains one of the most impressive capital allocation stories in modern biotechnology, indeed arguably in the history of modern finance. There, Roivant acquired a 75% stake in a discarded Pfizer asset for $45 million. Then sold the same asset to Roche, Arby, less than 18 months later for $7.1 billion, netting $5.3 billion in the sale, a return of over 100x. At the time, many observers dismissed this win as a one-off stroke of good luck. That lucky argument has become increasingly difficult to make. Today, Roivant boasts greater strength in its pipeline, development capabilities, deal-making experience, and access to capital than at any point in its history. The company's moneyball approach to biotechnology has produced a decade-long track record of value creation, which has seen the company compound from a $100 million biotech startup to $20 billion juggernaut. Roivant now enters an incredibly opportunity-rich period in the history of biotech with billions of dollars of dry powder at a moment when much of the biotech sector remains capital-constrained. The same environment that forces weaker companies to sell assets is likely to create opportunities for Roivant to acquire them. Let's bring our discussion back to money time. Roivant is no longer the screaming bargain it was at $11 per share, when adjusting the company's balance to reflect its hidden litigation assets meant that Roivant was actually trading at negative enterprise value. Yet from a risk-slash-reward standpoint, Roivant today is arguably as or more compelling. I can readily envision a scenario in which IMVT-1402 achieves peak sales approaching $7 billion, while Brapocitinib contributes another $3 billion. If peak sales for these two assets total $10 billion, Roivant will likely become a $30 billion to $50 billion enterprise, a gain of 50% to 150% from current levels. I don't think it's likely we'll see Roivant shares trade below $25 in the coming months. But if we do, I recommend that subscribers who do not yet own the shares buy them there. For subscribers who do own Roivant, I recommend continuing to hold until the shares reach at least $50. Action to take: buy Roivant Sciences, NASDAQ, Roiv, shares if they fall to $25 or below. Those who own Roivant already should continue to hold. Sagimet Biosciences, NASDAQ, SGMT. Prussian military strategist Helmut von Moltke famously observed, "No plan survives first contact with the enemy." Biotech investors learn this lesson repeatedly. Sometimes the science fails. Sometimes regulators move the goalposts. Sometimes capital markets slam shut. And occasionally, management discovers that an opportunity sitting directly in front of them is better, faster, and cleaner than the one they spent years pursuing. Such is the case with Sagimet, which has been my favorite name in our list of recommendations for a long time, and remains so today even as management has pivoted the company's emphasis. Let me explain. When we recommended Sagimet in January 2024, then in September 2024, and yet again in January 2026, our thesis centered on denifanstat as a best-in-class treatment for fatty liver disease, or MASH. We were attracted to denifanstat's unique mechanism as a fatty acid synthase, FAN, inhibitor, its ability to impact all three major dimensions of liver disease, fat accumulation, inflammation, and fibrosis, and its potential to become a backbone therapy in future MASH combination regimens. That MASH opportunity still exists, and is still both scientifically and commercially compelling. But for now, management has made a nimble, opportunistic pivot. Sagimet will follow the money, the data, and a much faster development path into acne by seeking to get denifanstat approved and commercialized for that indication first. In late April, Sagimet announced three major developments at once. First, it raised $175 million in gross proceeds, eliminating the dilution overhang that had weighed heavily on the stock. Second, it effectively paused MASH development unless non-dilutive funding, for example, a juicy strategic partnership or acquisition offer, materializes. Third, it announced plans to advance denifanstat into a U.S. Phase 3 trial for moderate to severe acne in the second half of 2026, subject to IND clearance. At first glance, this may look like a retreat. I think it's better understood as savvy resource allocation by Sagimet's management. The challenge with MASH was never the science. The challenge was the calendar. Even under optimistic assumptions, investors faced years of clinical development, expensive combination trials, and an increasingly crowded competitive landscape before denifanstat's value could be fully realized. Yes, denifanstat's distinctive promise in MASH meant that Sagimet should have presented a juicy acquisition target for Big Pharma. But my guess is that Big Pharma, understanding the long path Sagimet faced in seeking regulatory approval in MASH, tried to steal the company with lowball offers. To its credit, Sagimet's management team didn't bite. By focusing on denifanstat for acne, Sagimet found a faster, more focused, and now fully funded path to a pivotal readout, one that leaves the company much more in control of its own destiny. Importantly, the acne pivot is grounded in bulletproof clinical data. Sagimet's China partner Asseltis has already reported positive Phase 3 results for denifanstat in moderate to severe acne, with the trial meeting all primary and secondary endpoints. The China New Drug application has already been accepted by the National Medical Products Administration, NMPA, China's equivalent of the US FDA. That does not guarantee US success, but it does meaningfully de-risk the mechanism. Furthermore, Sagimet now also has a second dermatology shot on goal. TVB-3567, its follow-on FAN inhibitor, has a Phase 2 clinical trial in acne planned after Phase 1 and regulatory feedback. This matters because it gives Sagimet a potential franchise with an exceptionally long patent life. Let's bring our discussion of Sagimet back to money time. The market today seems to be valuing Sagimet as a company that abandoned its original plan. I see something different, a company that found a faster route to the same destination. If denifanstat wins approval in acne in the US and Europe, and generates even $1 billion to $2 billion of annual revenue in a $10 billion market, Sagimet could be worth several billion dollars on the strength of its acne franchise alone. At that point, management would possess something it has never had before: the ability to pursue the enormous MASH opportunity from a position of balance and strength rather than dependence. Put differently, investors buying Sagimet today are not choosing between acne and MASH. They are buying acne as the primary value driver and receiving MASH as a free call option. That combination is why I continue to believe Sagimet remains one of the most favorably asymmetric opportunities in our list of recommendations, and why a future stock price in the $50 to $60 range strikes me as entirely realistic. Action to take: buy a full position in Sagimet Biosciences, NASDAQ, SGMT, up to $6 per share. Subscribers who already own the stock should continue to hold it. TG Therapeutics, NASDAQ, TGTX. We recommended TG Therapeutics in July 2024 at an entry level of $18.79 per share. Shares have recently traded around $38 after previously reaching a high above $43. I suggested that subscribers who captured gains of 100% or more sell half of their position and let the remainder ride. After refreshing our thesis, I think TG Therapeutics still presents a compelling risk/reward today, and I'm comfortable recommending that subscribers add to existing positions or open new ones if we see TGTX shares dip below $30. Our original investment thesis in TG Therapeutics was simple. The company's flagship drug, Briumvi, is a best-in-class anti-CD20 B-cell inhibitor for the treatment of multiple sclerosis. With compelling advantages for patients relative to established anti-CD20 blockbusters such as Roche's Ocrevus and Novartis's Kesimpta, Briumvi will eventually capture enough of the $10 billion-plus annual market in anti-CD20 MS therapies to generate at least $2 billion or more in annual sales. At the time we made this prediction, Briumvi had exited 2023 with total annual sales of $92 million, while recording $50 million in sales in Q1 2024. Here is Briumvi's sales progression since then. As this progression suggests, Briumvi will likely cross the threshold of $1 billion in annual sales in 2027 or perhaps even 2026. The $925 million sales figure for 2026 is the company's own estimate, which it has already beaten and raised last quarter. What's more, I'm even more confident today than back in July 2024 that Briumvi will eventually achieve $2 billion in annual sales. First, the drug has grown its dynamic share of the anti-CD20 in MS every year for the past 3 years, and, having recently exceeded 20% share, still has plenty of room to continue gaining ground. As an arguably better drug than its rivals, Briumvi, which TG Therapeutics has also deliberately priced lower than the competition, offers prescribers and patients a compelling better, cheaper value proposition. This value proposition should naturally translate into continued share gains. Second, TG Therapeutics has advanced clinical trials underway that could expand Briumvi's appeal still further, including for a subcutaneously administered version of the drug that patients could conveniently self-administer at home, with dramatically shorter administration times. Finally, TG Therapeutics has also significantly increased its balance sheet strength since our original July 2024 recommendation, ending the Q1 2026 with $572 million of cash and equivalents. The stronger balance sheet should enable TG to invest aggressively in Briumvi's continued growth over the coming years. Let's bring our discussion back to money time, or how we can get paid with this investment. Potential big pharma acquirers will likely value Briumvi at 3x to 5x its estimated annual peak sales. If we conservatively assume $2 billion represents that peak for Briumvi, and I could readily see Briumvi's sales peak being substantially higher, that implies $6 billion to $10 billion in enterprise value, or roughly $40 to $65 per TGTX share. The midpoint of that range is about $52 to $53 per share. This price target implies a 75% gain from $30, and a nearly 200% gain from our original reference price of $18.79. I anticipate TG Therapeutics will likely achieve this target by 2028, if not sooner. Action to take: buy or add to existing positions in TG Therapeutics, NASDAQ, TGTX, if the shares dip to $30 or below. Subscribers who already own TG Therapeutics should continue to hold until the stock trades above $52. There are no urgent or timely updates in our portfolio in the names we haven't covered here. Next month, we'll return with a similar, thorough review of the positions in our portfolio outside of biotech. And, if the opportunity presents itself, we may have a new recommendation as well. Wishing you a terrific start to your summer. Best regards, Erez Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the best buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.